from Boston, which is a very liberal, progressive town. It is, you know, near the colleges. And but you go 30 minutes outside of town where I'm really from, you could be anywhere. And I was thinking about that just 2 months ago. My parents were visiting me, and I'm in Los Angeles at my house, and I'm standing in my front yard with my father, who I would describe to you as Archie Bunker without the elegance and sophistication. And I turn to my father and I go, "See, Dad, this is why I live in Los Angeles, middle of January, 75 degrees. And my father goes, "Course it's warm, bunch of queers." And my wife is immediately, I'm like, "Don't, you can't let him get away with that. You have to say something." "Say what?" "He thinks gay people give off heat." "There's no argument to have." "Because love means never having to say you're sorry. And marriage means apologizing when you know that you're right." "And my suggestion is apologize. Apologize away. I am an apology cannon. I wake up in the morning, I'm sorry. Kids up. You know you're gonna fuck up before breakfast. Get one on the board. Who's it gonna hurt? I apologize for stuff I had nothing to do with. I'm really sorry your sister's boss said that shitty thing about those boots you like that you loaned her." "I'm gonna get some cereal now." "I'm really sorry I was laughing at the TV while you were thinking about a cat you had that died." "Clearly I'm an asshole. Maybe we could get me into some kind of therapy." But people say, if you apologize for things that you don't really mean, aren't you lying? Aren't you lying to your wife? Yes. You have to lie every day to get to that part of the day when you can sleep again. The most humiliating thing that ever happened to me in my career, several years ago, I was on the second to last Bob Hope special. And one of the things that I had to do as part of the special was I had to film a commercial with Bob. And I get there to the set, and there's just a big soundstage and two stools and a spotlight. And I got a vintage suit on, I'm looking groovy. And this commercial was really simple. I'm sitting next to Bob and I go, "Hi, I'm Dana Gould. Join me and my new best friend here this Thursday on his comedy special on NBC. And then Bob turns to me and goes, "Hey, I love this kid. Didn't you used to be my caddy?" And I go, now I haven't met Bob Hope yet, but at the time, he was a living legend. He was larger than life, which is why it was so surprising when he finally showed up and they introduced it on the PA. "All right, everybody, please welcome the star of our show, American comedy legend, Mr. Bob Hope." And the curtain swung open and there he was. This tired old man, didn't want to be there. White hair dyed brown, came out red. Lot of makeup, tan coat, tan pants. It looked like the beginning of the Dr. Zaius Comedy Hour.
"Tonight, for the very first time, we are being broadcast all throughout the Forbidden Zone, which was once a paradise, until man made a desert of it.
So I sit down next to Bob, and it's kind of awkward, because he's right next to me and he's not acknowledging me. So I say, excuse me, Mr. Hope, I just wanted to say it's really an honor to meet you, and thanks for having me on the show. I mean, the fact that I'm meeting you is crazy. The fact that I'm working with you, I can't even deal with it. It's nuts. So anyway, I just wanted to thank you, and you know, I'm really grateful for the opportunity. I really appreciate it. And he looked at me and he went, oh, God. Okay. You know, Bob, I have an idea. Why don't I go fuck myself? No, hear me out. I bet if I went over there and wedged myself into that cul-de-sac where the fire hose is, over time, with the right amount of breathing and yoga moves, I could probably literally, physically fuck myself.
All right, let's get ready to do one. Dana, put your arm around Bob.
I have to, Old man arm, like a sweater full of light bulbs. If you've ever held a tube sock full of dead goldfish, you know exactly what Bob Hope's arm felt like. Action. Hi, I'm Dana Gould. Join me and my new best friend here this Thursday on his comedy special on NBC.
Hey, I love this kid. Didn't you used to be my khaki?
Halfway through caddy, Bob's brain just went, fuck this. What consonants you got lying around? K, good, go. But he'd been such a dick that I really wanted to go, yes, Bob, that's right. I used to be your cacku.
Dana, keep your arm around Bob. We're gonna go again, Bob. We're gonna go again.
And that's when I realized that Bob does not like to be told he fucked up. But going again might not be the greatest idea either. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm no physicist. But my theory is, as the day wears on, Bob won't be getting chronologically younger. And I'm kind of worried around take three or four. Hi, I'm Dana Gould. Join me and my new best friend this Thursday on his comedy special on NBC.
Hey, I love this kid. Didn't you chow chow me me cuckoo?
There was just something he didn't want to be there, and there was something in his eyes. His eyes didn't look like eyes. They looked like soup with eyes in it. But he was just looking at me like I was young and he was not, and it pissed him off. And I swear, if there was something he could have done about it, he would have.
Hey, I got an idea. Why don't you stare into my eyes without blinking, and I'll recite the ancient chant that will transfer your youth and energy into my body, leaving you a dry and empty husk on the next full moon. Well, I'm not joking.
Runche onto Veneto Anu. Runche onto Veneto Anu.
Now, as I get older, I have a lot more sympathy for Bob than I had at that time, which was none. Because when you think about it, by the time he met me, Bob Hope had been famous for 7 decades. Think about how many times he had to sit there and listen while the same young comedian had the same speech about what a pleasure it is to meet you, it means so much, without taking into consideration if he was tired or wanted to hear it or not. I mean, in all honesty, to Bob, I must have just been like a giant crow in a vintage suit, you know? Excuse me, Mr. Hope? Yeah, yeah, terrific stuff, kid, yeah. Yeah, dynamite. Poor fella. I was born on August 24th, 1964, which is exactly 9 months and 2 days after the Kennedy assassination. Which tells you all you need to know about how my father processes grief. And now when I watch the footage, I have very mixed emotions because I realize if he misses, I wouldn't be here. Hurry up, he's almost at the underpass, shoot! In 1966, when John Lennon said the Beatles were more popular than Jesus Christ, the Ku Klux Klan put out a hit on him. Ku Klux Klan to the rescue! The Ku Klux Klan, flawed organization. Even from a design standpoint, their weapon of choice, flaming torches. Their uniforms, flowing, billowy fabric. Did that ever come up at an early meeting? We're gonna rid the South of the Negro and the Jew. And we're gonna do it dressed up like scary ghosts. Why? Because we hate the Negro and the Jew. And it is fun to dress like a scary ghost. Can I be a Dracula? No! It's been decided. I'm the Grand Dragon. Well, what's a dragon doing in charge of a bunch of ghosts? Seems to me you should be some kind of super ghost. Perhaps a Dracula would be better suited, because the worst thing a dragon can do is kill you, but according to legend, a Dracula, like a ghost, is already dead. Just saying. What if I am a dragon that breathes special anti-Dracula fire? That's the first thing you said tonight that makes a lick of sense. But you're forgetting that I'm the one that built them crosses we's gonna burn. Then it is decided. We will rid the South of the Negro and the Jew, and we will do it dressed up like scary ghosts, except for Wilson, who will be a Dracula. But Dracula is not racist. Dracula made
Blackula. Hello. And if Dracula can make Blackula, can't we all get along? Now, just to put you at ease, in that bit, I was using the word negra, which is how people in the South pronounced the word Negro, which was the accepted term at the time in which that bit takes place, which is the mid-50s, so historically, I feel I'm okay. I think my favorite part of 9/11 was the Muslim terrorists. When they went to Muslim heaven, which we all know isn't true, they can't be in Muslim heaven, they're in Christian hell. Unless they go back and forth, which you can do, because they're both pretend. But when they went to Muslim heaven, because they martyred themselves, the reward for martyrdom, which is in the Quran, they each got 72 virgins. That's the reward for martyrdom. I don't recall sex with a virgin being the best sex I ever had. It was very awkward. Overly emotional. It was very hurdy. And don't forget, the next day, that's 72 phone calls. Are you my boyfriend now? Oh, God. People forget Muhammad Atta's up in Muslim heaven. Why can't you just be cool? Hang on. Why can't you just be cool? Hang on. Why can't you just be cool? Hang on. I have a little confession to make. I actually have never slept with a virgin. But I do love breaking the seal on a new GIF. You gotta be really hard. Enjoy the image. I paint a picture with words. There's no middle ground on those jokes. People love them or hate them. I think the most impressive human being I ever met, when I worked at The Simpsons, I got to meet Professor Stephen Hawking. Yeah. Now think about this. He's the Beatles of scientists. Think about it. If that represents the most successful version you can be of a thing, then by that definition, the Rolling Stones are the Beatles of music. Not counting the Beatles. John Lennon is the Beatles of the Beatles. Pete Townsend is not the Beatles of the Who. Keith Moon was the Beatles of the Who. Which is why, when Mick Jagger salutes Pete Townsend, you have to believe him, because only the Beatles of the Rolling Stones knows who the Rolling Stones of the Who is. But that analogy only works on positive things. It's never like a negative connotation. The killing fields of Cambodia were the Beatles of human suffering in the 20th century. Normally, I'd recommend surgery, but it's the Beatles of tumors. I don't know how I'd get at it.
Adolf Hitler, the Beatles of dictators.
People get into relationships and they continue to act as if they're still single. You think, like, it's kind of like I'm still single, but now there's this long list of shit I can't do. That's not how it is. You are now a couple. It's a totally different organism. You have to think in a completely different way. This will help you. Men, listen to me. Imagine if you only got fruit from one tree. You would take such great care of that tree. You would water it, you would tend to it, you would prune it, you would give it sunlight and nutrients. That tree would never want for anything because it was your only source of nourishment. And women, to us, you are that tree. So shut the fuck up. No, don't misunderstand what I'm saying. Hear me out. Trees are very quiet. You go out into the forest, hundreds and thousands of trees. Not a peep. You never hear anything.
There's a bird on me.
No, you'd never hear it. If you come at a tree with a chainsaw, all you hear is the chainsaw. Not so with women. Because life is too short to spend it fighting. You have to get together and get along. And here's again for guys, simple piece of advice, take it or leave it. A great way to avoid arguments in your relationship, never finish this sentence. You want to know what I think? Because I'll tell you what I think. And you're done. No one ever had a great night at home after finishing that thought. It's one of those statements that tells you the real trouble's coming right around the corner. Right up there with, watch me scare the president.
Honey, throw the baby over here.
There is one show that I do watch. It's about LA crime, and I'm really fascinated by that. And I was actually thinking about it the other day because I was up here and I woke up early. And it was a really cold, clammy morning, you know, and obviously. But it reminded me of what it must have been like on a very similar morning in Los Angeles. In 1947, when a woman was walking her baby at the intersection of 39th and Norton Avenue in South Central Los Angeles and saw what she reported to the police appeared to be a discarded dress mannequin lying off in the weeds. But that dress mannequin turned out to be the body of a woman. A woman named Elizabeth Short. Elizabeth Short had been reported missing for 4 days, and apparently she had been in the hands of a madman. Her body had been severed in half at the waist. The organs had been removed, the blood had been drained, and worse of all, her face, one massive bruise, with the corners of her mouth slit from ear to ear, creating a hideous, leering grin that somehow mocked the very brutality that had befallen her. She became known in the press as the Black Dahlia. And to this day, some 60 years later, the police still don't know what she said to deserve that.
It must have been a doozy. I mean, Po-Buddy's nerfect. But really. My favorite part of that bit is about halfway through when you guys start going, what's happening? What's going on?
Is it his mother? Is he having a stroke? Am I having a stroke? Do you taste pennies? I smell toast. Here's a really funny story about a recent murder. I was in Los Angeles, I was driving my kids to school, and I heard on the radio that right under the Hollywood sign, they'd found a severed head. And the first thought I had before, like, oh, gotta turn that off, kids can't hear that, or like, oh God, that's terrible. The first thought I had was, that sounds like a lot of work. I mean, to begin with, there's no road that goes to the Hollywood sign. You have to walk like a mile and a half through scrub up a hill. In this instance, with a head. It was so like a movie. It was found by a guy's dog. This is all true. There's a big dog park at the foot of the mountain that the Hollywood sign is on. It's actually the perfect symbol for show business. The Hollywood sign, and then a big, beautiful place that is actually filled with shit. And I always meet the most beautiful women when I'm walking out of that dog park with a 15-pound bag of shit. And it's never on the day I'm with my dog. But some dog got up into the scrub and got this thing. Came running down the hill, and its owner was like, what'd you get there, buddy? What'd you find there? And then the world's most high-stakes game of put that down, put that down, put it down. All that dog is gonna hear for the rest of its life, buddy, no kisses, no kisses, no kisses. I was like, I don't get it. The police thought I was awesome. This guy, no kisses. Oh yeah, the dog talks. I should have mentioned that. That's actually important. My wife is the smartest person I know, hands down. And she has a very involved job. She works really hard. And when she comes home, she just shuts off. And she will only watch reality shows. And the dumber the show, the more she wants to watch it. I cannot be in the room when they're on. Because you will never experience less reality than when you're watching a reality show. You're watching people who aren't actors put into situations created by people who aren't writers. And they're second guessing how they think you would like to see them behave if this were a real situation, which it's not. And you are passively observing this. You're watching an amateur production of nothing. It's like a photo of a drawing of a hologram. It's the Beatles of wasting your time.